This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, well, it's about 8:32, so I think we could go ahead and get this meeting called to order here. And I think that we are shy on numbers, which isn't unusual for a Friday morning. That's okay. I want to welcome our esteemed guest, Ryan Lombardi, and that's a bit of a joke between Ryan and I. Once introduced him as an esteemed guest to his entire division, but here I could go with esteemed guest here because you know, that makes sense, right, Ryan?
You can go with guest. I don't know about esteemed.
Very happy to have you here this morning. We've got a few items that we're going to go over before we get into a question and answer here that I've collected a few questions from folks, and we'll kind of go over that. Just to get it out of the way, we'll go ahead and quickly do attendance based on who's here on the Zoom. I'll call out the name so we have roll call. We have Nick Denev, not here. Heather Donato is here. We have Catherine Huang is not here. Risa Lieberwitz is here. Jen Michael is here. Laura Taylor is not here. And Salam Molde is not here. All right. Well, let's go ahead and jump in, folks. I don't think I sent it out to everyone, but I did send Ryan the agenda. Just going over what we'll be talking about today. We'll be starting with just kind of a brief overview for Ryan in regards to the UA Resolution Number 22 in regards to the University Hearing Board. I'll give you all updates on where we're at from the actions we took from our last meeting in regards to that. We'll speak a little bit about the current caseload with the OJA in regard to the current code of conduct and a potential solution for completion of those hearings proposed by Christina Lang. And then we'll go into some questions and answers that I've sent Ryan in advance to talk about. And we'll have time at the end, if we do, for a little open roundtable discussion. And then if we finish up with that, we can talk about a couple of small items. We can let Ryan go on the rest of his day, and we'll finish up a few small things. So we'll start here with the UA Resolution Number 22. Those most on this call are familiar with it, but I want to go over it a little bit with Ryan to just discuss the actions that the CJC, in conjunction with the University Assembly, have passed through and are working on. So one of the big asks of the CJC is to fill the members of the UHRB. We were faced with the kind of conundrum of how do we go about doing that, since there's a new student code of conduct that isn't yet fully out there, and folks applying for the position to be a part of the UHRB may or may not be familiar with this transition that is happening. And then we had this group of UHRB members that were set to expire at the end of this year because they had a couple of emergency appointments, from my understanding, just due to challenges in getting them filled through the CJC previously. And so we did a couple of things to try and solve up some of these different areas. So we'll start with the current group of UHRB members. What we did in this Resolution 22 is to allow for anyone who is currently acting in the UHRB, whether they're, and at this point, pretty much everyone's appointment ended on May 31st of 2022. What we allowed for is all of the members of the UHRB currently to be extended until May 31st of 2022 and have them focus solely on current code of conduct matters. So what you do is you have a trained group of people who have been a part of the UHRB, have heard cases under the current code, asking those folks to see if they're interested in continuing on and do so only under the current code of conduct matters. So no student code of conduct matters that happen to come out between now and May 31st of 2022 would be heard by this UHRB cohort. And so as such, we sent out a letter earlier this week to ask for those who are on the UHRB currently if they would be interested in extending their appointments. We did receive a pretty fair number of folks interested in the extension numbers. I know Gina's traveling right now, but before I give numbers, she's going to get to the office, and when she does, I'll have her give us that update on the numbers to make sure I'm reading those correctly. But just wanted to kind of update that we are getting good responses. We are getting folks interested in extending their appointment, so hopeful to have that. We will have some vacancies in this current code of conduct, UHRB members. And so we'll talk a little bit more at the end of the meeting about how we go about soliciting some applicants for filling that small number that we might need to really fulfill what we'll talk about here in a moment about the current caseload. And why don't I just pause there and make sure everybody's clear and I addressed and stated everything factually and correctly, because it's a lot of moving pieces. So I want to make sure I didn't miss anything about the current code of conduct methodology we've put together. Comments or questions there? We feel good? Okay. Ryan, did you and Ryan, feel free, you know, if you have questions as we go along, because this is all new information to you likely. So don't hesitate to pop in and ask questions.
All right. Thanks, Brandon.
Absolutely. All right. So now let's get to what we're calling sort of the other cohort of new student code of conduct UHRB members. So the other thing that Resolution 22 is just simply solidifying that the CJC can solicit for applications for a cohort which would hear new student code of conduct cases, and that their appointment would begin in essence upon the start date of the new student code of conduct. So really the resolution was somewhat complicated, but at its core was creating a cohort that is current code of conduct and a cohort that is new student code of conduct within the UHRB, and that in essence, never the twain shall meet. You know, they're simply divided there, and that way there's no, oh, I need to switch my brain and think about this code, and now I have to think about this code. From our last meeting with the CJC, we kind of talked about how to go about getting applicants for the new student code of conduct, and some general concern around how we might be able to do that effectively. And so the decision was made to sort of put that on pause for a moment, because there's a lot of unknown in the positions and the staffing and the training process and all those things. So members of the CJC feel that it's, you know, it would be challenging to actually solicit for applicants to that position at this time. One, it's near the end of the semester, and two, that code of conduct isn't fully out there. And one of the questions that we'll ask Ryan is a little bit about how the communications in regards to the new student code of conduct will roll out, and perhaps that may give us an opportunity to solicit applications in that communication process. So that's kind of the two cohorts that we've established through University Assembly Resolution 22. One thing that Assembly's chairship gets you really good at saying things really fast and in a lot of things in one word, but sometimes I bumble it. Anyway, so I think we're in a good place with the two different groups of folks. And like I said, when Gina gets into the office, I'll just confirm some of the numbers that I am seeing there to make sure I have those correct. But I do see those numbers of the current code of conduct. We didn't get a resounding no from everyone. We got a number of folks saying they were very enthusiastically interested in joining us for the remainder of that time frame. So now, any questions there on the new student code of conduct cohort?
Maybe I just can use this point, since you offered, you might regret that I could jump in and ask questions. I certainly understand the rationale of, you know, having these kind of two bodies and keeping, as you used, never the tween shall meet, keeping them at that point. But maybe I would imagine, and I don't know if this is your vision too, after all of the kind of backlog cases from the old code are completed, it does seem plausible that some members of the UHRB from the previous code might be interested and or, you know, very strong candidates for the new. Is that a fair sentiment, do you think? Or I'd be curious your thinking on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anybody else would, I'll answer, and then others are welcome to chime in as well. The appointments that we've provided to these folks, it states explicitly that their appointment goes until May 31st of 2022. Or until they graduate, leave the university, or all cases under the current code have been resolved. So it gives all of those clauses. And at that point, as they would in essence be, you know, you would call just a member of the body, they could then apply to be a part of the UHRB in any way. They would not be excluded from joining the UHRB. But the goal there is really to keep them on one track,
right?
Let them finish out that track. And then if they so chose to continue, so, you know, say they were really excited and loved the work and wanted to learn the new student code of conduct, they would not be precluded from doing so.
Okay. Makes sense.
Great question. Thank you. Go ahead, Risa.
Yeah, thank you. So I guess one of the good things, Ryan, about your being here is that, and thanks for joining us, by the way, because I think you might have a few things to do these days.
That's all right. No, I appreciate that.
Right. None of us has free time, right? But, you know, with the new student code of conduct, there are explicit provisions for the timing of when the hearing and review board members need to be appointed. There's that April 1st date. And obviously, as Brandon noted, given that we don't have the new student code of conduct in place, there isn't a director, you know, we'll be talking about all that. We also thought it was good to have you here so that everybody can be clear, and in particular you, because you haven't been in on these discussions, that it's just necessary to not only pause, but to recognize that we're not going to meet those deadlines that are in the new student code of conduct, because the people who are involved in meeting those deadlines aren't even in place. And so it's understood that we're going to follow the process of soliciting and having appointments to the hearing and review board as can be done in this kind of interim period between where you have an overlap of old and new. The new doesn't have a director. So for example, in the you know, new student code of conduct, it says that if the Senate and Assembly do not provide the director with the necessary number of applications by April 1st of a given year, the director may independently solicit applications or otherwise identify interested faculty, students, or staff. I mean, obviously that can't be done for multiple reasons. So I'm taking a long time to say, I'm assuming you're on board with basically suspending those deadlines, and this would not be a process that would then be simply taken over by a director when a director is appointed saying, oh, well, you didn't do this on time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I appreciate you bringing that up. I think you're right. This transition period is going to call for a lot of flexibility and a lot of good communication too, and good collaboration more than ever. I would suggest, and I would, you know, maybe just jumping ahead a little bit into some of the discussion or the Q&A, that some of that collaboration begin as soon as possible, you know, now if possible or sooner. And I'm glad to be here. Maybe that's a signal of starting this, but also I understand that that Marla, our Dean of Students, and our Interim Dean of Students, and Kevin will be coming soon. And I think that's going to be those two individuals. Of course, Christina and Vin are always here, but those two individuals to help with this transition are going to be really critical in starting that collaborative process now, and making sure that, and even this question about communication and how do we start getting the word out, I think that should be a partnership, and there should be an open conversation about these points, Risa, around flexibility and timing and how this is all going to come together. I know they're putting together the process for the search. The job was just posted. And so, you know, kind of getting a sense of envisioning when they even expect to have when Marla expects to have a director appointed, and then how we lead up to that with all of these logistics. I would encourage us to just put all that stuff on the table and make sure that there aren't any miscommunications, Risa, I think, you know, so at where people feel like they've been excluded, or, you know, that the process got ahead of things, because I think we're all navigating this together, and I would like to see it work that way.
Yeah, well, I think that's good. You know, the particular point was to make sure that a director doesn't come in and say, well, now I'm going to unilaterally make appointments.
Right. Yeah, no, I get that point. I don't sense, I mean, certainly it's not my sense that there would be any intention to do that. But I think, again, getting that on the table with all of our folks as quick as possible so that we go into this with a shared understanding is important.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm sure we're going to be talking more about the appointment of the director and how that's going to be done, et cetera.
Thank you, Risa. Yeah, that was one of the questions that was stated in there, because if you look at that code, that item in the code about the by April, that it would be filled by the director, that is based on the current code in which there's a process in which January, February, March are the time frames in which the new appointees are filled. And so it was really simply, they just replaced, you know, the UA, the, you know, they just put in there that if it's not done by this point, which it typically is, then the director would do that. So that'll be something that we want to make sure that we communicate effectively with Kevin and Marla as they're discussing the transition and looking to hire that director. Any other questions on that regard? And then we can go on to the kind of the next piece about kind of speaking about our current caseload. And then, like I said, we have just a few questions for Ryan. So on the current caseload, so Christina contacted me, I think it was about a couple of weeks ago now, just to kind of update on where the OJA is in regards to current caseloads. So in essence, all the current code of conduct cases, and acknowledging that that number can go up from now until the new student code of conduct comes into place. You know, obviously the hope is that it's limited. But that, you know, Christina had a concern in being able to effectively address all of the cases that are out there right now, and ensuring that they can meet that. And the proposal that Christina provided was to continue hearings over the summer, and that, you know, historically speaking, cases have not been heard over the summer, precluding specific circumstances or need of a student to do so during the summer. The standard process is the semester ends, the OJA pauses all cases and hearings, semester begins, they start back up. So looking at the current caseload that is on the plate of the OJA, Christina, and the concern that, you know, the idea is to get all of these cases heard and finished with the implementation of the new student code of conduct, so it's not dragging on for you know, inordinate amount of time having both of these kind of cases. So she had proposed that the OJA be able to continue working over the summer, hearing cases that, you know, obviously it requires that there be staff. So that was one of the things about the UHRB appointments, trying to identify how many total appointments that we have. And Christina has put together sort of a list of how many cases she would hope to hear, excuse me, over the summer, and how many people it would take to do so. I apologize, my allergies are really rough this week and just still getting over that. And so Christina put together a very thoughtful proposal on how to best address hearing those cases over the summer, acknowledging that while it's not standard practice, it is not excluded or explicitly stated that it cannot happen in any of the code documents. So it's very easy for this to happen and be and continue without there being any, you know, bylaw changes or anything of that nature. It's really just a matter of saying, hey, we can do this. Is everyone on board for doing this? And that's the work that Christina is doing. So perhaps, Christina, you might be able to give us an update and kind of, because from the CJC and the University Assembly standpoint, and I think I mentioned that I was speaking with Logan after our last meeting, everyone's in agreement that all of this is by the books and totally okay to do and continue cases over the summer. And just wanted to kind of hear from Christina and perhaps where you're at in beginning to look into that.
Sure, thanks, Brendan. So the last time I had shared with the group this proposal, and we had some really thoughtful discussion about some concerns related to compensation, and I completely understand that. I'm appreciative of the historical context that was provided in that area. And I want to circle back and just clarify there absolutely was no intention for the JA's office to provide any of that compensation, just a piece of clarification. But I understand everybody's concerns there. Once I heard from Brandon that from the University Assembly's perspective, there was support to have this happen, I reached out to the Dean of Faculty, Charles Van Loan, and that's because the hearing board, of course, includes faculty members who are appointed by that office as well as chairs. And so that is a piece that we're working on now to also share this intention to have summer hearings and gain support to staff them. So that's where we're at now. And we're meeting next Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Christina. And to clarify for Ryan, in the proposal, there was a piece stating about the potentiality of compensation because of that fact that it was happening over the summer. And in speaking with members of the CJC and the University Assembly, felt that you know, while we appreciate and applaud the idea of like compensating students because they're working in the summertime and maybe they had other things, it really would establish a precedence that at this time isn't there. So really think that feel that it's best just to continue and ask and hope that the students will want to do that. Many students do the work on the UHRB often for resume building. Staff members do it out of, you know, a volunteerism and a goal of community. And so I think, you know, keeping to that heart of what we do is really important. With Gina being at the desk, perhaps you, Gina, I don't know if you have had a chance to finish a tally up of how many we have on the UHRB. If not, we can continue to pause and get back to that.
Sure. It should go right into it. I don't know if anybody had any questions or follow-ups on what Christina said, but the outreach that we did to the inviting people whose terms were going to end on May 31st of 2021 yielded, as Brendan mentioned, a fair response, and we'll follow up with those folks that we did not hear from. We did hear from several students who are graduating, so we did have a good response. As it stands now, of the 25 students needed for the UHRB per the code, we have 14. Of the 15 faculty, we have 13, and of the 15 staff, we have 12. So obviously the biggest, we're missing 11 students to have a pretty full cohort. So that would be where we would need. And we do have still 7 students that we haven't heard from. So we'll do that outreach as soon as we can.
Great, thank you so much, Gina. I appreciate that. I'm glad to hear where we are with those numbers, and that you know, outside of the students, we're pretty close to having a full cohort that we can work with on the current code of conduct matter. So again, Christina, thank you for that update. I think you're trying to work out all the staffing pieces and figure out if you have all the players needed to do so, including members of the JCC and all of the other folks who are involved in this process, all the staffing wise. And so why don't I just pause there and see if any folks have questions, or Ryan, if you had any questions about the process of the summer hearing proposal that's out there right now.
I don't have any questions. I guess I would offer my support, not that it, you know, it's formally needed by any means, but just to try to keep things moving and try to keep the resolution on those cases going. I think that makes good sense for all parties involved.
Absolutely, I would agree. I definitely applaud you, Christina, for seeing that and being ahead of that to try and coordinate getting those cases resolved, so that when we do get into the fall semester, we can have that caseload be as limited as possible to move through and really sort of get that, hopefully that clean sort of break happening sooner than later, you know, rather than this dragging on. My hope personally and goal is that we don't have this happening through May of 2022, that cases are able to be resolved and the new student code of conduct is cases are all that we're hearing. You know, it'd be great if we could get that done in the first semester. So those were kind of the main items now. The next on the agenda really is just a few questions that I had collected for Ryan, and I collected some in advance. And you know, if we do have some questions outside of this, I think knowing Ryan, I'm sure he's open to hearing some questions. I think I'd just like to acknowledge that, you know, if you have very specific and detailed questions, that may be things that Ryan would need to look into and get back to us on. This is, I think we can all acknowledge that these are lengthy documents with a lot of information in them, and expecting anyone to have everything fully understood and memorized and knowing many of the things that we don't know at this point is definitely understandable. So I want to just preface it with that, Ryan.
Well, and if I can, Brandon, I might also provide the context, and I'm not sure if this update has been given. So I think that sets the tone for the discussion. The code speaks to this obviously residing within, you know, the Office of the Vice President for Student Campus Life or my designee. And so I do want to make sure everybody understands that the Dean of Students, current interim dean, is Marla Love. She will be providing the direct supervision and oversight to the director. So that director will be a member of her senior team, a direct report to the Dean of Students. Marla, of course, is, you know, one of my key deputies in student and campus life. And so, Brandon, to that context, I thought I heard that she's going to be joining you all here relatively soon. She will be at the level to get into much more of the detail than I will. But I'm happy to, like Brandon said, answer anything I can answer and certainly take notes, and I will make some notes of things that I can engage with her and talk with her about as we continue down this transition.
Thank you, Ryan. And that's a great update. I appreciate that. You know, that was not something that was clear to the members of the CJC or here, kind of the structure and some of the questions that we have here. I think the first question that I had was, and I think that, you know, acknowledge that you may not have an exact answer, but I wondered if you had a vision or a thought around how, what role you would see the CJC playing in conjunction with the OCCS. I think that's a really important question for members of this committee.
Yeah, I think that's going to take some time to figure out. I mean, I think it is a good question, and I think that's something that you'll want to, as a committee, certainly continue to think about, but again, in collaboration with Marla, with the director, with me and my team, what the best function and role can be. As you all know, having glanced through the code or read it in depth, depending on your ability or your time availability in this crazy year, the formality of roles is pretty minimal in there. And so it's really things like, where the formal parts are continue to be with the UHRB, as we were just talking about. That's a really critical component, I think, and will be a really critical partnership going forward. Obviously, any assembly can propose changes to the code or amendments and those types of things. So that's out there. So I think, you know, the kind of what else is the question, right? And what value would be there. And I think, you know, from my seat, it necessitates, once a new director is appointed and in place, really building a relationship with that individual and that office and figuring out how the groups can work together and be useful and support the ultimate goal of educational and restorative processes here at Cornell. So that's ambiguous and unclear, because that's a little bit of where we are right now. And I think probably why you asked the question, Brandon. And so I think it'll take some time to figure that out.
Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate that. I think that you raise a valid point there, and that, you know, there are some hard and fast sort of, this is what happens. And then I think, you know, there are some flexible items. You know, one of the things that was brought up is, you know, it says about the UHRB that it's done in conjunction with all of the assemblies. And a question was brought up, well, does that mean that now all the assemblies have to like get applications and send them all to somebody and then they review them? Mm. And I did clarify that I think that ultimately it's our process, and the university assembly is a gathering of all assemblies. And if the university assembly feels the current process that the CJC is doing, then we would continue. There doesn't need to be a change. The code doesn't explicitly state you must change the process to this. It simply says in collaboration with all assemblies. And I think that's one of the things I do like about that there were some less rigid items included in the code to allow for us to have that interpretation within the assembly. So I think I appreciate you acknowledging that.
Yeah, I think that makes good sense, Brandon. I mean, you all have an established process and a way that you do this, so continue to shepherd that. I mean, I think, obviously, it calls for inclusion of other assemblies, but, you know, I think that probably already happens and can be something that you all continue to shepherd. So I would, my encouragement on that would be to just lean into that and do that. And you know, again, you know, collaborate and partner with the office, but don't, you know, don't sit back and look for more directive language. Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So the next question that I had was, what do you see as your timeline? You mentioned that you've got the position for the director posted and, you know, beginning that process. Obviously, the code explicitly states that this must be in place by the beginning of the first day of the fall semester. So how do you see a timeline working as far as staffing and developing training and all those things and understanding? I'm sure a lot of it's in flux right now, but where you see things right now would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, and this is, you know, goes to, I think, Reese's point earlier. I mean, this is obviously a very chaotic time for all of us, and we've been working flat out or studying flat out if you're a student and doing all you can for these months. So, but you know, we've got to make this transition, and we're working very hard. That's a big part of why we have Kevin in place to help us begin to prepare for this and do some of that transition prep. The position was just posted, I think, within the last week. I mean, very recently, at least I got the update that it was put out there. I know our hope is to have a new director in place right around the fiscal year turnover. So probably, hopefully sometime in early July. You know, these things are always dependent on the search, right? I mean, you just don't know how searches are going to go and all of that. But I know that Marla is working aggressively to put together a timeline that's appropriately aggressive, but also gives room for the zigs and zags that come up when you do administrative searches, depending on the candidate pool, depending on specific candidates' availability and all of those types of things. And so that, but that's the hope. So if you back up from that, I mean, you're hoping to, if you want a person in place by early July, you're hoping to make offers probably in early June at the latest, maybe earlier, right? Because, you know, people, if they're in a current role, have to give notice. If it's a relocation, if it's not someone that's already in the community, you know, then there's that you have to factor in. So I think you're looking at hopefully early June. So that, I know those details are being developed and the process will be appropriately aggressive for that. I think then the hope would be that we could, and I know that new code, I think it stipulates that there has to be kind of a public, I don't know, proclamation is the right word, or announcement about when the new code will take effect. But I think the intent is, our hope with that new code would take effect in early August. So effectively at the start of the month of August, as we start to ramp up into the new academic year. In that. So it, you know, it obviously leaves very little time once a new director is in place. There will obviously, we've got current staff members in the OJA's office who will undoubtedly be a part of this new organization and help with that continuity and making sure that we get up to speed. So that's kind of in somewhat broad brush strokes, the timing, but, and I fully acknowledge, as you said, there's a lot to happen in there. And that doesn't even include, and I don't, you know, without going into a ton of detail, one of the things that we had asked Kevin to do, and Christina is probably aware of this, is kind of an analysis of the staffing in what the caseload looks like now and how the current structure has been able to manage that, and then what we project that to look like in the future. And also, I think our aspiration to be able to better resource the office than what the OJA's office has been resourced in the past. And I think with all appreciation and gratitude to the staff in there, I think they've been, I mean, I'll just state it, I think they've been under-resourced for some period of time. And so part of this is me trying to make the case to the provost as the chief budget officer for the university for some additional support necessary to even augment the staff going forward. So once we do build out this new system, that we can make sure it's effective, but also timely and efficient for the benefit of our students and everybody. So that's another element to this, right? Is building that piece out. And it's a difficult time to be asking for growth in resources and staff given the influence of the pandemic on the institution this past year.
That's thank you so much, Ryan. I appreciate that overview, kind of understanding the timeline and kind of acknowledging the challenges that come with all of this, and definitely acknowledging the OJA's office and the folks responsible for, you know, shepherding this code through and getting students through the process and ensuring that we have proper staffing for that. One of the things that wasn't on the question, but you had mentioned sort of that messaging. I think, you know, and I would encourage anyone else to chime in here as well. I think that's probably from my standpoint, one of the biggest challenges around this is getting students to understand what this means. Like, you know, we had such a hard time getting people to even give us feedback.
Right.
Let's be frank. It was primarily law school and law school alumni were our largest voices. And there were a number of others, and I don't want to exclude others, but they were the largest volume of voices being heard. And so, and understanding that it is a, you know, somewhat legalistic process. And so many students have a challenge understanding, you know, even myself coming in as the committee chair had a challenge understanding what any of these things meant to the community as a whole. So the question, I guess the follow-up question is here, you know, how do you see us effectively communicating this to the students that there is this change and what the heck that even means?
Right. And acknowledging that it may never mean much to most many students, right? If they don't interface with the code or have a reason to. I think that's a great point. And I think that what we're planning is some concerted resources, human resources during the fall semester that are not necessarily just the people that are doing the work of the new office, but you know, some support resources in the Dean of Students office that can really help from a communications, an information, you know, roadshow, and really trying to engage students. I mean, one of the reasons I decided to have the position report to the Dean of Students is because the Dean has such a you know, kind of a deep seat into so many important student populations on campus and can really help with that understanding and awareness of what the code means. Not only that, but also because they have a care and crisis team and there might be interface and support necessary there. They have alternative resolution staff. They have staff focused in our student resource centers. So there can be a lot of support there too. But I think we'll have to be really intentional, and it won't happen overnight, Brandon. I mean, I think it will take time for, as it probably did 50 years ago. I mean, it'll take time for the code and what it means to really become part of the fiber of the campus and the student body. So, but it is our plan. I mean, just to state it succinctly, it is our plan to dedicate specific resources to this for at least the fall semester to help with that kind of information campaign, if you will.
Great, and I would just, and I'll probably do the same when Kevin and Marla are here, put in a plug for the CJC to be involved in that communication strategy. So that, as I mentioned, we will need to look for applicants to the UHRB. And I think that I think it's important for students to understand that this exists, that the CJC exists in conjunction with the code of conduct, so that they know there is a forum in which they may have challenges with this code of conduct and that they can bring that to a forum to be heard. You know, I think you typically only hear, you know, one or two emails of somebody who's in a dire situation reaching out to understand their predicament. And so anything we can do to try to get students to hear and know that we're available as a resource would be really important.
Yeah, and I applaud the efforts that this group made in this past school year when this whole conversation was happening. And I think, you know, optimally, and I'm sure we share this perspective, I would like to see the student body writ large take more of an interest in this code. And I think that goes two ways. I mean, it is a byproduct of us needing to do a good job of communicating about it, but it's also doing whatever we can to encourage folks to understand it, to be familiar with it, and to recognize its role on campus. And I really, you know, I mean, I think this was kind of discussed a little bit during the process of considering a new code, but I do hope that it is a living thing, right? As it should be. I mean, we're not static in our society and we're not static on campus. And I think that, you know, the more students do understand and engage with it, the more that will come to life as well.
Absolutely. No, I definitely agree with that. And I think that's really important. All right. And then I think we answered the next question that I had on my list that I had sent to you of kind of, you know, addressing that April deadline. We talked about that a little bit earlier. And I'm glad to hear you, you know, again, I hear from you and I know you see this ambiguity and this flexibility that's within the code and that we're in this transitional period and how do we best address that? So I appreciate that. One of the last questions I have here is sort of speaking to the code counselors in both the respondent and the JCCs, and wanted to get a sense from you, how you foresee, because I think, you know, as I read the code, I don't see, and I see this having some flexibility in how the code counselors, it kind of just says that in conjunction with and in collaboration with, how you see the code counselors being selected and filled through the process. And this might be a nuts and bolts question that's better for Kevin and Marla, but wondered if you had any thoughts on your perspective.
Yeah, I would probably say that, and not to push it off, but they're probably going to have a little bit more of a refined perspective on this. I mean, from my seat, as I, you know, obviously, again, we're in this transition moment. So I think, you know, the head code counselors, I think, you know, have been selected as is the current process. And then they're really selecting the rest of the team that they shepherd along. In terms of how that looks in the future, I haven't given that a lot of thought myself and haven't been involved in a lot of those conversations. But, you know, these are, you know, important roles, obviously really critical, I think, to the new code as the way it's written. And so I would encourage discussion with Marla and Kevin about that. If there are particular positions or thoughts that you all have as a CJC, to put those on the table and share those up front and try to, you know, see if there can be some thought given to an inclusive process as that comes about. I know even with the director, for example, that there's a desire to have that be an inclusive process. I mean, there will be opportunities for the broad community to engage with those candidates and those types of things. So, yeah.
Great. Thanks, Ryan. And I see Marissa, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just for context for the group, I just wanted to share that we have been in pretty constant communication with both Kevin and Marla about the upcoming selection process. We shared, you know, hiring rubrics with them, interview questions. They've given us feedback. I'd say we talk to them a couple times a week. So that integration is happening right now, just for context.
Terrific. Thanks, Marissa.
Thank you, Marissa. I appreciate that. Well, Ryan, I think we made it through the questions that I had sent in advance. And again, if you're open to it, I'd like to open the floor and see if folks had any follow-up or additional questions if time still allows for you.
Yeah, of course. That would be fine. And I will just note, I mean, it goes back to the question that Risa asked. I mean, even when I was talking about this timeline, you heard me say that the hope is for a new director to be in place in early July. So that really speaks to the, you know, the dissonance with the way things are written. So I am going to share a few of the notes and things that I've already heard with Marla. So hopefully when you all have a chance to spend time with her, she'll know what some of these things that are on your mind too. So I'll be sure to pass that along as well.
So did any of the members have any questions or follow-up items that they'd like to ask Ryan? Go ahead, Risa.
Yeah, on the search for the director, And again, maybe this is something for Marla in particular. The student code lays out who should be on the search committee and all that. And given the timing and such, and getting into the summer, is that going to? Do you think that's realistic that there will be that sort of engagement with not only having people on the search committee, but the sort of inclusive process that you were just referring to with regard to the search? I mean, we're in a funny position. I mean, the obvious last year has created so much stress for, you know, the obvious stressors we know about. So all of this has been difficult. And I was thinking about that in terms of what Brandon said about the difficulty of getting people to respond, you know, to the new code. I mean, remember we were doing that while everybody was scrambling to try to figure out, you know, what's happening personally and you know, nationally and globally. So, you know, I think the fact that we had as much participation as we did was actually quite impressive. I wouldn't say that it should be viewed as indicative of some sort of, you know, non-interest in what's happening. So, because this has become kind of our new normal, it's sometimes easy to forget that.
Yep.
But, you know, but we're still in this process of people feeling terribly pressured. So how is that going to affect, in your view, you know, the search?
Yeah, it's a great question, Reese. And I think that there's probably a risk there that it will. I'll say, I mean, I know, for instance, that they've immediately trying to engage, as the code stipulates, you know, members of the student assembly, GPSA, et cetera. But I think the broader question there is a good one. I will say that I think the track record that Marla and the Dean of Students team has is exceptional in this regard. I mean, a lot of the, really virtually all of the positions in that entire organization are very student facing. And so, and have this kind of impact on the broader community. And it's really unacceptable in our perspective to not engage the community in most of the searches that they fill in their offices, whether it's, you know, a position that supports students of an identity, you know, a student resource center, something like this, or like I said, care and crisis services. And so I think it's a risk, and I think we have to be mindful of it as we go through this process, but I also have a lot of confidence given the dean's track record in engaging the community on a lot of the important hires that they've made, so, and that they always have to make, so. But I'm gonna make that note too. I mean, I'm certain that's on her radar, but I think it's a great point.
Yeah, can I just follow up? Yeah. I mean, even though there's nothing in the code, I think there still isn't nothing in the code about the university assembly specifically being, you know, involved in these processes. I think that regardless of whether that's in the code, that sort of spirit of bringing people into the process that will affect the community, it would make sense to also engage with the university assembly because, of course, these other assemblies are all within the university assembly. So as a coordinating process to get input, I would hope that the Dean of Students Office would also work with the university assembly.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that comment. Like I said, I know it's their intent to be inclusive in this. I shared that, you know, with Brandon months ago, that's very much how we like to operate these kinds of searches. I don't know the specific plans, but I will very much share that perspective.
Great questions, Risa. Any additional questions from folks? I will echo, Risa, you know, your sentiment around engagement that many students and staff and folks and faculty across the board that, you know, the peripheral engagement is a little bit harder for many folks in this time frame because it's sort of this idea that everything's accessible. We can just hold a Zoom so everybody can do anything at any time, wherever they want. And it actually is the antithesis of that, and that people are less available because people just, you know, assume everyone's available, and both on an actual calendar perspective and then just a mental perspective as well. So I definitely will echo that sentiment, and I definitely wish Marla and Kevin the best of luck in being able to get that full cohort of folks to engage and be a part of this process. And then the same kind of applies to the communication strategies and how best to do so. I think those are going to be really key factors here. And I think that's going to address a lot of our concern around getting participation.
Yeah, those are... I echo all of those things, and everyone is zoomed out, right, and tired of doing this, certainly. Well, I'll speak for myself anyway, and a lot of students that I speak with. The other thing I'll mention that is a risk factor, I think, in this transition is, frankly, the job market, right? And what will this look like in terms of candidates and interest? And not that I have a particular insight or leaning in terms of what that's going to look like. It just feels like an unknown to me coming out of the pandemic. You know, will people be interested in transitions? You know, I just don't know. And so to me, that's a risk that we'll need to watch really carefully as the pool develops or doesn't develop in the interest in this. I do know that, you know, obviously we'll be trying to sell this, and Marla will be trying to sell this as a new, you know, kind of a building opportunity with a new code. And hopefully that will be attractive and generate a high quality pool. But, you know, again, we're in very different circumstances right now. And just be curious to see how that impacts the search on that end too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if there are no other questions, just give a quick pause and see if anybody had other questions. Well, I greatly appreciate you, Ryan, taking some time to meet with us here today. I think you gave us some good insights of things that, like I said, I was not aware of, kind of the timeline and some of the communication strategies that you have currently working on. And encourage you, like I said, Kevin and Marla will be joining us, and we'll speak to them again. But as you go through this whole thing, thinking about how the CJC can best support this transition and ensuring that there is a constant reminder to folks in the communication strategies that there exists this body, because it is really important that this group be able to provide value and input and insight and have that additional influence with the people who are on this committee, who have chosen to be a part of this and volunteer their time to do so, are able to lend that voice to things as we move forward. As you mentioned, it being a fluid document, great to hear that being stated, because I think that is extremely important. You know, let's acknowledge that Madeline did a tremendous job taking all of the feedback and hearing the voices being stated and what needed to be done. But those are a snapshot in time, and that our community, our society, our students, our staff, our faculty all evolve as things change. And knowing that this document is a living document is really important, and that we as the CJC are here to provide help and guidance to folks who need it, and help to address the concerns that come up as a result of that code of conduct, so that it is not just a written in stone document and never being able to be changed. So I just want to, and I also want to put in again an appreciation to everyone on this committee for the work that they've done to get us to where we are right now, and the challenges that we face to get input and feedback and get all that done in a timely fashion, and really very, very proud to be a part of such a tremendous effort from everyone, and really excited about having you, Ryan, taking this forward and helping to usher the new student code of conduct into place. And again, just ending with, you know, the importance of the CJC and the University Assembly being communicated as a resource throughout this process, that no one feels like, here's this code, here it is, this is what it is, and good luck, students. That, you know, you have a resource when you see challenges with this, and you need to be able to ask questions, because frankly, asking counsel's office a question about interpretation of a code, or even some you know, going directly to a JCC or other folks may be intimidating, whereas this should be seen as a body that is impartial and indifferent and available as a resource. I think those communication efforts will be really important as we usher this new student code of conduct in.
Sounds good. And I echo a lot of the words you just shared there in terms of the gratitude to this group, and just appreciate y'all letting me spend some time with you this morning, and look forward to doing it again. And probably won't see you again this spring, but in the fall. In the meantime, I wish you all a good rest of your day and a safe and healthy weekend.
Thanks so much, Ryan. You too.
Take care.
Take care. All right, folks, that was a good visit. I learned some things I didn't know. So that was helpful, kind of the strategy and the communications and kind of where they're at. I think it further enforces I'm glad we were able to get Kevin and Marla to join us toward the end of the semester. I think that'll be good to have hopefully this spurred some questions. I will ask if we can try to have more questions coming from the members here for Kevin and Marla, because those are going to be the folks that can answer some of the nuts and bolts, more detailed questions. So if you have those, if you held back because you weren't sure if that was the right timing, like, it's important to ask those questions of Kevin and Marla, because they're the folks that are leading the charge of really getting this move forward. Obviously, it falls within Ryan's office, and Kevin and Marla are really the key drivers for this. So important to involve them in that conversation. I think one thing I just want to speak to is sort of, you know, again, kind of continuing our conversation around the new Student Code of Conduct UHRB members, and how best we as the CJC can address that, because that does still remain with us. And I think, as I understood it from Ryan's perspective, that idea of, you know, if it's not done by April, the director gets to do it, isn't really the goal here. That really the hope is that the UHRB is filled by this body. And I don't foresee it being a matter of, you know, well, we couldn't get it done by July 1, so the director is going to come in and do that. So I guess one of the questions that we want to ask ourselves as a committee is this work achievable? And, you know, obviously I would say from my perspective, I don't see it achievable in completing by May 12th, which is our last meeting. Is there an opportunity as the communications go out about ushering in the new student code of conduct Should we look to think about convening this body a little bit earlier to begin conversations? Typically, we would start at the beginning of the semester. But you know, if we start at the beginning of the semester, that may put us a little bit behind the eight ball. But just want to put that out there and ask if folks have thoughts, ideas, or concerns around that. Putting meetings on all summer then. No, I'm just kidding. I think it's just important to acknowledge that I personally don't feel that we should wait until the start of the semester to begin that process. I think that will put us behind. And so I guess the question again, I would be more clear in my asking would be, you know, as Ryan had stated, the goal is by August, beginning of August, to have that code ushered in. Should we look to, you know, as I mentioned, and I hope that Kevin and Marla will assist us in this, as they communicate that new code coming in, that they communicate that there is a need for members of the University Hearing and Review Board, and perhaps Gina, we can kind of tie in our communications with that, those as well, to try and solicit applications throughout that process. Any thoughts in that regard? Go ahead, Gina.
Yes, I do think that there will be opportunity to coordinate messaging and effort. I guess my initial thought is it's a little bit of cart before the horse at this point. Wait until Kevin and Marla come, because there's still some pretty nuts and bolts part of the process that aren't clear to me, that I think Ryan was good in deferring because they're vague enough in the new code, but haven't been articulated just in terms of the process, having nothing to do with a timeline, but really, like, as I mentioned in some of my questions, who's actually appointing this new cohort? What body needs to review them? The new code is very specific about the SA and the GPSA having eyes on them at some point. All of those things just need to be fleshed out, both for this unusual first year, but also, I think, as Risa and you, Brandon, did a good job of pointing out, to make sure that this body is still involved moving forward. So maybe between now and the time that Marla and Kevin come, give some thought to how to articulate that best.
Okay, great, I appreciate that. I think that's important to kind of try to figure out how we best address that. And I think to Gina's point that Kevin and Marla will have a more concrete or kind of approach of how they're going about doing this. And I think we want to just ask those questions. So, you know, I encourage you all to send, you know, questions over of how you might ask of them how to go about that process, so that we can really get a little bit into the weeds, because that meeting will be in the weeds. It will be Christina and Marissa and kind of presenting sort of those, here are the differences between these two codes as we see it from our perspective, and then allowing Kevin and Marla the ability to kind of speak to those items. So I think it's really important that we ask those questions. Go ahead, Risa.
I'll wait. I know Heather wanted to go. I'm fine to wait.
All right, well, go ahead, Heather.
Oh, I was just gonna make a comment about Risa's question that she asked earlier about student involvement in the search process, and thanks for the director. And I just wanted to share that Marla had reached out to me, since I am a representative through the Graduate and Professional Student Assembly. So I know that she is doing some outreach to get students involved in the search process, but I don't know specifics of that. So I think that is still a good question to ask. I just wanted to let everyone know that there is some looking for student involvement.
Great. That's great to hear. Thank you for that update, Heather. Risa?
Yeah, a couple of questions. One very specific one. I think it'd be great if we could get a link to wherever the director search position opening has been posted. I always find that Cornell website a mystery with finding certain things. I kind of come upon them if I happen to get lucky that day, and other days I can't, so I can't find it. But that would be good for us to have. Oh, great, Heather has it. Yeah, you know, it's like, where do you look on these? Anyway. The other one is in terms of our committee and the question about, working in the summer. It's like, who is the committee? I mean, I believe I'm done. I was just looking at the list of appointments. And if those are up to date, it looks like, I don't know where things are in terms of reappointments on that committee. Maybe you know, Brandon, but that would be one question to answer.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'm not super familiar with that as far as how that goes. I'll bring this up is one of the things that was asked is sort of in the event that we need to fill additional UHRB members over the summer, typically those have been done through the executive group. I'm drawing a blank on the, for the university assembly. The executive committee, they're called, and they would be, and one of the things that Logan had asked is if the CJC might be willing to entertain that happen, and that they're being asked that be in conjunction with myself, so that we have a representative of the CJC working with the executive committee to fill those emergency needs. So that's where, if we run out and Christina has hearings, but we just can't get enough people and we need to try and fill a few more slots, if we can take some applications and bring some folks in, if that appointment can happen over the summer. And then that is a good question for me to clarify with Logan and kind of how this committee can operate during the time in between and understanding, the term appointments and such. So go ahead, Marissa.
Oh, I think I was just going to add briefly to what Heather said and about the engagement process around the new director applicants, and share that Marla and Kevin had given us the dates of, I believe it's May 20th through May 26th, where every day they have spots held for community presentations throughout the university. And I know that I'm also going to be attending the interviews around the same amount of time. So just for context, I know they're holding a significant amount of time to engage with stakeholders across the university.
That's great. And if I could ask for Heather and Marissa, if you can help to keep us comprised of those community pieces, because as we all know, we get a boatload of emails and it's really easy to miss those things. So if you wouldn't mind just sending out to the CJC list when you see those officially scheduled for the community kind of hearing or community presentations, that would be great.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks. Go ahead, Risa.
And this, what I'm about to say is not criticizing anybody, because it's just, everybody's in such a crunch, but having things during finals, in terms of people, students actually engaged in that, I assume it's not going to happen. There might be a few people. And again, I understand everybody's in a crunch, but I have my doubts about whether it could be successful in really engaging students. And maybe they never would be engaged. Maybe there isn't a good time, but
Yeah, I can definitely understand that, that is a challenging time to ask for student engagement toward the end of a very long and crazy and weird year for everyone, to try and hope that they would tune in to see a staffing position filled.
I'm sorry to interrupt, just in terms of dates, when are finals over? I'm assuming the students know this, because I've checked it and then I forget. And I kept thinking what you just said was during finals. Is that during or after finals? Does anybody know?
Seems like that would be the senior week, 24th to 25th, since Christina is the last day of finals for undergrad. Yeah, so
the last day is 25th.
Yeah, so it would fit in that kind of what they call the senior week timeframe, in between finals and graduation. So
the 20 to 26 would fit right in finals. If the last day of finals is the 20th.
Oh, did you say it was the 20th through the 26th? I was sorry if I had the dates wrong there, Marissa.
I did say that, yeah.
Okay, so it is during finals. Okay. Any other items there? As I mentioned there, the conversation around summer ability to fill appointments is kind of done, like I said, through the emergency process through the executive committee. And Logan had just asked if the CJC would be willing to recommend that myself as a staff member and who's here all summer and the chair of the CJC be involved in that process. So I wanted to see if folks had any opinions or thoughts in that regard.
Go for it.
All right. Well, just to make it more formal, I would entertain a motion for such to be done. We do have quorum here, which is rare. I like to have motions, so I feel official with it, if folks don't mind.
Make the motion. And I don't even know the words, but there you go, Brandon.
You just say so moved. That'll take care of it.
So moved. I'll go with this unanimous consent. Is that what the term is? Nobody opposes. All right. So that's fine. So then I'll communicate with Logan on that regard. And then one thing I do want to acknowledge, and Heather, I apologize I didn't bring this up to you in advance, but I wanted just to acknowledge the email that you had sent in regards to your appointment moving forward. So Heather brought to my attention that she will be working as a respondent code counselor, is that correct? In the fall. And so yeah, therefore, so, go ahead.
Yeah, JCC, but like the new name for it.
Yeah. And so brought that to my attention as concern. Which I greatly appreciate you bringing that up, because a lot of folks just kind of move forward and wait until somebody says it's a conflict of interest. And in speaking with Logan, the primary concern would be any involvement in actual review of applicants for the UHRB. So as I see it, we don't have an opportunity to review applicants for the UHRB for these last couple of meetings. So therefore there is no conflict of interest for that, but it would be a conflict of interest, obviously, moving forward beyond this semester, because you haven't officially started the position. So just wanted to bring that to the attention that, like I said, I don't foresee us having the ability or time to hear any or look at any applicants between now and May 12th, which would be our last meeting of the group. So therefore there wouldn't be any reason for Heather to not attend this or that next meeting. So that's, I appreciate you bringing that forward, Heather. Thank you so much. And thank you for, you know, continuing to be a part of this process and being involved. It's greatly appreciated. Gina, go ahead.
Hi, sorry, we're wrapping up elections for the faculty elections today. So lots of things happening. In terms of the unanimous consent motion that was just passed, I just want to, I think there is an additional action that you need to request from the UA at its last is, again, because your term expires on May 31st, I think it would be prudent wise and certainly a great thing for you to ask to extend your term as chair of this committee and perhaps all of you in interim until the fall through the summer as provisional, sort of a, you know, an extension of the CJC, given the transitions going on, so that you can continue to act. Otherwise, you have to wait till a body convenes and you go through the whole process and you might be selected, maybe not, but this would ensure continuity during this really critical phase.
Great, I appreciate that insight, not something I was aware needed to happen. So would that be something, again, that we would want to have a motion here from the CJC to then ask of the UA to do, or would we just simply ask of the UA?
I think if not a formal resolution, you should certainly get commitment from who is willing to do that extension and then put that into the formal request of the UA. So maybe do it hereby. I'm not sure if unanimous consent would be the way to go since everybody's, maybe it is. I leave that to you, but okay. What you'll want to do is know what body is being asked to extend.
Okay. So I think then we would entertain a motion here to allow for the extension of all members of the Campus and Judicial Codes Committee to be able to continue through the summer, having terms for those appointments ending at the start of the fall semester, at which time there can be the reconvening of the UA and the reappointment of committee members. So we'd entertain a motion in that regard.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded. Any opposed?
Can I say I'm not opposed, but I guess the assumption is that it would be anybody who's eligible to serve.
Correct. Yes. Right? So if someone was graduating, they would not. Seeing no opposition, that motion passes, and I will speak to Logan about getting that onto the agenda. I don't foresee any challenges there, and just adding that short item to allow us to operate, and as well appreciate she will appreciate being able to continue the work as needed over the summer. I know Logan is graduating, and so that changes kind of that role, and I'm not sure how that kind of happens. I think. I'm not even going to go into the details of that because I don't know any of that detail.
That'll actually happen at that last meeting. The internal elections will take place. That's the reason for the timing of all the constituent assemblies is so that the new executive committee of the UA can be elected before the end of the term. So we'll know who the new executive committee of the UA is at the May 11th meeting.
Okay, great. All right, any other items from folks? I think I got through what I needed to do to kind of finish up some business and things. Any round table from anyone? Well, I appreciate everyone's time. Christina, keep us in the loop as you continue your hope for that summer process and wish you the best of luck in being able to secure all the staffing needed. We'll keep reaching out to the, Gina said they're gonna follow up to those who have not responded to our initial request for extension. So that could potentially, out of the seven, maybe we get, four more and we get you up to 18 students would be awesome. I guess the question that I would ask of you is kind of how close do you need us to get to that 25 student number to feel comfortable operating through the summer? And you'll have to have an answer right now, but if you could just communicate that with myself, I can work with Gina on that.
I'm happy to share right now. I think it's really just about the availability of people. Yeah. So, if there are 10 people only, but they have abundant availability, then that's fine. Yeah. But there can also be 25 folks who are unfortunately have limited availability. So it's more about the availability versus the number of people.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that'll be something then again, what we just done here to be able to continue over the summer will allow us to hopefully be able to manage and adapt as we go through. So thank you all so much for your time this morning. Thank you everyone for being here to hear from Ryan. And again, we'll just ask one more time, please to send questions that you have for Kevin and Marla so we can have a good conversation with them and looking forward. And thank you in advance to Christina and Marissa for the work being done in the code comparison. I'm sure that is not an easy task, so it's greatly appreciated. All right, with that being said, I think we can go ahead and end this meeting. All right, and Gina, do you have a moment you could hang
motion to adjourn, right, Brandon?
Oh, yes, I do need that.
I'm going to become the parliamentarian now, so motion to adjourn.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any opposed? Seeing none, we will adjourn. Thank you. Jen, you just volunteered yourself as a parliamentarian. I'm going to add that to your title there.
Never. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Have a good weekend, everyone. And Gina, do you have a minute to hang back?
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.